corporate candy floss news and no political spin. This is Truth Radio by Internet. Thanks to our sponsor, neemwell.com, because here, the expression is still free. He's a published author on fascism, democracy, and serial killers. He's a researcher and writer on 9/11 issues and a commentator on US society. He's Dave McGowan, and he is our guest. You're on the next level.
Would you do me a favor and push me on to the next level?
And you're very welcome. You're on the next level on breakfornews.com. This is Fintan Dunn reporting. Thank you for joining us. Thanks also to our sponsor, neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. It's an outstanding, astonishing Indian herb, and Kathy McMahon formulates it in a hypoallergenic base, just wild-crafted organic Indian neem, cocoa butter, and grapefruit seed extract as a preservative. That's it. Pure, natural, and more details are at neemwell.com. That's neemwell.com. Do yourself a favor, check it out. And check this out too. Our guest in this edition is Dave McGowan. Dave is a published author. His books include Programmed to Kill: The Politics of Serial Murder and Understanding the F-Word, American Fascism and the Politics of Illusion, also Derailing Democracy. Dave is also a seasoned commentator on the American scene and a 9/11 researcher to boot. He's been on the show before, back in 2004, and that seems like such a long time ago now, doesn't it? But we're very glad to have Dave back on the air again. His website, which you can check as we speak, is davesweb.cnchost.com. That's davesweb.cnchost.com, or just click on Dave's photo right beside where you clicked for this audio. 2 years. Can't believe it's over 2 years since we had Dave on. So without further ado, let's get straight to it, because he's joining us on the line right now from a sunny Los Angeles. Dave, you're very welcome once again to the next level. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm very glad to be back.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me here.
Hey, you know what? It was the 9th of September 2004 when you were last on the show. Hey, a lot of water under the bridge in the last couple of years, Dave.
Yeah, the world's changed. It had changed quite a bit the first time I talked to you, from pre-9/11 to post-9/11.
Yeah, well, look, I got to just check as well, Dave, would you? Just to make sure, because there's a lot of crazy stuff gone down in the meantime. You don't by any chance happen to believe that, like, no planes hit the World Trade Center? You haven't come over with that conviction in the meantime, Dave?
I have not, no. Okay. Despite being at one point severely browbeaten by the no plane crowd, who I don't normally frequent, like discussion board type things, but somehow or other these guys put me on their little groups, their little inner circles email list for a while.
Yeah.
Sort of tried to draw me in and basically just started like demanding answers to all these ludicrous questions, and it was like a no-win situation, because if you don't answer them, then they've proven that you can't really back up your position, you know, and if you do try to answer them, then you just get verbally assaulted, you know.
Yeah, right. But I also have to check with you, Dave, you haven't also by any chance come over with the conviction that some kind of space beams were shot down at the World Trade Center and knocked down the Twin Towers, have you?
I have not progressed in my 9-1-1 thinking to that point. No, okay. I guess I'm not keeping up with the portions of the skeptics crowd, because I haven't endorsed the particle beam weapons or the microwave weapons or the mini nukes or, you know, any of these other, which, by the way, I think that there's sort of a two-pronged disinformation campaign there. I mean, they throw this stuff into the mix, and, you know, one of the reasons is just, you know, to make the entire 9-1-1 crowd just, you know, look like a bunch of crazies that'll, you know, latch on to any, you know, nutcake theory. But specifically with regards to those, it's occurred to me that all of those kind of theories they all have one thing in common, which is they do not require a lot of pre-planning, which a conventional controlled demolition obviously would have required.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, one final question. You haven't either come over with a terrible conviction that all of the people who were on that plane that allegedly hit the Pentagon are still alive and were working for the United States government.
Not only have I not come around to that, I actually wasn't even aware of it until you mentioned it the other day when we were talking. That's a new one on me. You mentioned who it was that had thrown that out, but I don't remember.
Okay. It's one of the leading lights in the 9/11 movement, Mr. Jimmy Walter, the mysterious millionaire who so fortunately happened to show up at the right time. And in 2004, when he was asked on Anderson Cooper what happened to the people on the plane if it didn't hit the Pentagon, he said, well, I don't know. I'm not the guy to ask. I haven't got an idea. But unfortunately, by 2005, he'd caught this 9/11 mental lunacy virus. And on Penn and Teller, he said that, quite frankly, he thought they were still alive and all working for the U.S. government.
Well, there you go.
Well, look, I'm very relieved to hear all that, Dave. You know, Jesus, there's not many of us left who haven't been stricken.
I kind of get the same feeling that, a lot of the movement has drifted off into all these, wacky sort of directions. And again, they're kind of elements that just make the whole movement look, ridiculous in the eyes of the, John Q. public. You don't need any of that to build the case. I mean, there's a pretty simple cut and dried case. The evidence is very clear in several areas that don't require any sort of these bizarre sort of explanations. It's just look at the evidence and analyze it as you would any crime scene, and the case is quite clear. And
yeah,
and that, of course, is why there's so much of this disinformation and nonsensical stuff going around, because the case is so clear cut. And it seems to me that the best way that they have, that the powers that be have, since they can't directly attack the the real planks of the 9/11 skeptics case, because they're so firmly established, the approach is to just throw all this other nonsense into the mix, and through guilt by association make the whole movement just look loony,
fruitcake, totally fruitcake. Well, you probably remember when I came out with that list of CIA fakes, and I got a lot of stick for it at the time. But hey. Maybe I was onto something, Dave. Hey.
I think so. You walk a fine line there, because there's so much there's so much deliberate effort put into creating dissent among the ranks, and creating all this sort of infighting and finger pointing, and no, you're the one spreading this, no, you are,
Yeah.
So when someone that really sincerely wants to, try to, expose the people that are peddling the bullshit, then you just look like another one of the people that are stepping in to, to divide and conquer the movement. So, I 100% support what you were doing, but by the same token, there's just so much infighting and finger pointing that how is the average Joe, the rank and file person out there supposed to know who the real good guys are that are trying to identify the bad guys versus the the fakes that are just pointing fingers at each other.
Yeah. Well, it took a while for the analysis to get out there, but, we've got a few hundred people on the forum now. They've been through the evidence, and, hey, they've seen it. They know the deal. They know that this has been pre-planned, and they know that we were sabotaged from real early on.
Absolutely, yeah. Right from the beginning, right from the get-go, you had people like my old buddy Mike Rupert, stepping up to the plate, proclaiming himself to be, the king of 9/11 research pretty much from day one. And you look at him now, he's got like zero credibility now. I don't know if you followed his saga for the last year or so, but...
Well, yeah, I have. Of course, I have. And you are early on to that, dude. And you can check that out, folks, at davesweb.cnchost.com. And you got a few articles there about old Mikey and his sojourn down in Venezuela. Of all places, Dave, of all places.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, he's back in New York now.
Yeah.
And according to me, I don't know if I should even mention it because I have no way of verifying it, but I've heard from a couple of people that he was recently institutionalized in New York, but I have no idea if that's actually true. I know he claims to be getting, you know, medical treatment, and I think he has actually acknowledged that he's gotten mental health treatment there as well, but...
Hey, that would fit the pattern.
I don't know what's going on. I think they're reprogramming him for his new mission or something. I don't know what. I really don't know what the hell's going on. But he's back in New York after claiming that, you know, his life was in danger here in the States and out in the middle of friggin' nowhere in Oregon. You know, his life was on the line, but he can stroll around New York City apparently with no fear. So, you know, I don't.
Yeah, well, there you go. You were wondering at one stage if they were going to do a sort of a Chilean job and pilot him into Venezuela to hang around there and spy on the administration down there. But it looks
I believe
as if,
that was his goal. I mean, yeah. he's complained in several of his posts since leaving there that, you know, griping about how he wasn't able to, you know, gain the trust of Venezuelan officials and this and that, and they looked upon him skeptically. He even wrote it, well, he wrote it something to the effect of, I don't know if this is exact words, but it's close. He said, a lot of the Venezuelan people seem to be suspicious of a blue-eyed former LAPD narc from a CIA family. Ain't no shit, Sherlock. anybody with half a brain should be a little skeptical of a former LAPD narc from a CIA family, you know? I mean...
Okay, well, look...
But especially when he's spewing out, you know, blatant disinformation about 911 and peak oil and the Gary Webb, you know, two shot to the head suicide, and, you know, I mean, the guy is just... He's just completely discredited himself with a little help from a few other people, but you know, he's done a lot of the work himself.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it has been difficult for people, you know, for the average person who knows there's something wrong with the 9/11 deal. It's been a very difficult time for them because a lot of them are quite disillusioned and they haven't caught on to what's been going on. They haven't realized how deeply this was planned and how all of this infighting and lunacy was on the agenda. But however, hey, we just got to deal with that, Dave. Here we are now, 2007. And in a way, we're only really starting now with the disinformation crew sort of pretty reasonably outed at this stage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're obviously at a severe disadvantage because, I mean, these people pulling the strings, they're not stupid. You know, there are a lot of things, but they're not stupid. And they've been at this a long time, and they had a very, very long time to plan this entire operation and how it was going to be presented. Not only how it was going to, you know, how it was going to be presented to, you know, mainstream America through the official story, but also how it was going to be presented to various dissident groups, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, they got the, well, Israel did it, you know, line for, you know, for the patriot types or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, you know, they got all of these different stories and diversions, you know. I mean, they had a long time to plot this all out.
Yeah.
So, you know, it puts us at quite a disadvantage. But our one advantage being that they did a pretty sloppy job and left a lot of you know, incriminating telltale evidence. If you can get the people to focus on the actual evidence and ignore all of the, you know, nonsense
yeah
around out there.
Yeah, well, to an extent, you know, the first 4 or 5 years is a sort of a lost leader. They knew they had to cover it really well during that first 4 or 5 years. And so that's what I mean about we're sort of starting now. But they sure did have a lot of time to plan. And you've pointed out that the 1993 World Trade Center bombing may well have been a planning exercise to see how long did it take to evacuate the buildings, to just gauge the whole dynamics of that, because they were going to carefully craft the casualty rate.
Yeah, I believe that could very well be the case, and there were upgrades made to ease the process of you know, mass evacuating those enormous buildings. And yeah, I believe, you know, I mean, the casualty rate was astoundingly low. You know, I mean, I don't want to downplay the death of, you know, 3,000 people. That's obviously a considerable tragedy, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you know, most of us should remember from the early days, they were talking, you know, like 50,000 plus casualties, you know, openly. I mean, everyone on TV was speculating, just, you know, talking about, you know, what the normal occupancy of these towers was, and, yeah, you know, the normal occupancy of the Pentagon, and, you know, the carrying capacity of the various airplanes. But if you look at it, I mean, every one of those was, you know, virtually empty for some reason. You know, all four of the flights were just radically underbooked, even though they were all, you know, morning commuter flights flying flying through corridors that normally carry a heavy amount of commuter traffic. All of the flights were drastically underbooked. The World Trade Center buildings were underoccupied. The section of the Pentagon that was hit was almost completely unoccupied. And, you know, so there, I believe there was, you know, I mean, they did, which is, you know, that's not, not to say that they're good guys or anything, but there was, there does appear to have been, you know, it was planned out to limit the casualties as much as possible, it seems to me.
Well, look, there's a whole lot we got to cover, because, 2 years is a long time. A lot has gone on. Let's get into some of that. I'm glad to hear that you haven't caught the West denial virus, and that you just haven't entered loopy land. We'll just take a quick music break. I'm with Dave McGowan. The website is davesweb.cnchost.com. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com, and we'll be right back.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump, unlock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, bring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start format. At it. Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump, unlock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, twitch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, stop, formatted. Technologic, 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 technologic. Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, crash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, crack it, drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump, unlock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it, buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip, unzip it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it. Scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it. Lock it, fill it, curl it, find it. click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, use it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it.
And you're very welcome back here on The Next Level on breakfornews.com. I'm with Dave McGowan, the Center for an Informed America. And you've done a lot of information on the website, Dave. You're up at newsletter, what is it now? 90-something, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure, actually. I haven't put anything new up for a while, so I don't remember the last one. It was like 90 or 91 or something. Mm-hmm. They're not even really newsletters anymore. I don't even know why I still call them newsletters. They started out as sort of like a, I don't remember if it was like a weekly or biweekly sort of roundup of all the news that the mainstream press ignores. And they've sort of drifted way off from that original purpose. So I don't even know why I'm still, it just makes it easy to just give them a number and slap them up there, I guess.
Yeah, well,
I think I'm up to like 91 or something like
that. You're at number 91, and keep it up, dude. Because
I intend to.
Yeah.
As long as I can get away with it.
Hey, I've got the same bug. You know, I don't know why I'm doing this, but then I don't know how I could not do it. You know what I mean? You got that feeling ever?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I sometimes wonder how I ever ended up down this road. But now that I'm on it, I feel pretty much. I don't know, obligated or not obligated, but I don't really know what the word is. Just
you put it very well yourself, Dave.
You put it
very well. You said that once you get this far down the rabbit hole, there's nowhere to go but further on. You know.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much, and you know, I mean, to me, it's like I don't know how anyone who is a parent or a grandparent. For that matter, I'm not to that point myself yet, but you know, that is aware of all this, you know, of what's really going on in this country and what's going on in the world. I don't know how it's possible to sit back and not try to, you know, do whatever you can to raise awareness, or you know, to do whatever it is that you're capable of doing to try to make things better, because. You know, the world that our kids are very soon going to inherit is going to be a very, very ugly world to live in.
It's already getting pretty ugly over in Russia, in Chechnya. It's pretty ugly what they're about to do in terms of creating the North American Union and the destruction of the middle class, both in Europe, I think, and in the United States. And
I agree 100%. Yeah.
And then the global corporate takeover of the world's food production, with most people ending up eating genetically engineered muck, courtesy of the Codex, which they're rushing through.
Yeah, beans boiling green pretty soon, I think.
It's unreal, dude. It's unreal.
The movie Soylent Green with Charlton Heston.
Yeah, exactly. Very predictive. But, you know, it's a combination of having to laugh, having to keep yourself sane, you got to laugh, and at the same time realizing the seriousness of all this. And just turning back to the 9/11 issues, I mean, what we outlined there is a host of disinformation agents. And I am an optimistic guy, Dave, and I do feel that at some point in the future, guys like Alex Jones and Jimmy Walter, etc., remember we got Pinochet eventually. And long before those guys get to the age of 85, they're going to be sitting in front of some committee. They're going to be sitting in front of some people's tribunal. And we're going to want to know what are they doing being accessories after the fact to murder, and who the hell hired them, and who told them what to say, and all the rest of that good stuff.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that I'm quite as optimistic as you, but I certainly hope that we get to that point someday.
Well, you know what I am I'm mostly patient. I'm a very patient guy, and I'm prepared to wait, and I'm prepared to work until it happens. And I do believe it does happen. You know, look back, and you see that. You know, the truth comes out, Dave. It does eventually.
Yeah, I mean, it's my hope that these people will do themselves in through their own arrogance, you know, because they've just, I mean, it's pretty obvious in recent years that they've just gotten increasingly arrogant to the point where they just think they can pretty much get away with anything and, you know, through their control, I mean, pretty much absolute control of the media, they can sell it. And, you know, in a lot of cases they seem to be right, which is very depressing. I mean, there's been a lot of times over the last, you know, 10 years or so when something has happened, it just seems to me like, well, this could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, there's just no way that people are going to buy this story. And they always do. You know, I just, I don't know. I try to remain as optimistic as possible, and I definitely retain my sense of humor, because without that, I mean, you can't really survive in this world today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've.
But I don't know that I'm quite as optimistic as you are, but I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, about a year ago, Newsletter 81, you wrote about the "It Can't Happen Here" edition, and you were basically saying, you know, what the hell does it take? To get there's a lot of good psychological warfare going on. Maybe that's the answer to your question. What the hell is the matter with you people? And what does it take to get you off your asses and resisting this and out in the streets? What does it take? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, as I was just saying, you know, yeah, what does it take? I mean, how many of these outrages are you going to sit through and do nothing, you know? I don't know, you know, we're a very complacent people over here, apparently, here in the States, you know? The American people are sold from birth on the notion that we're the greatest country. Well, I mean, people in every country probably are, but I don't know to the extent that we are here. And, you know, that we have this great free press and that nothing bad can happen here because, you know, we have all these democratic institutions and the greatest free press in the world. And you don't really have to worry too much, and you don't really have to keep that close an eye on what's going on because, you know, this is America, and, you know, a bit like that doesn't happen here. And, you know, how do you break that mindset? That's, you know, I guess that's, it kind of boils down to that.
Yeah, you know.
How do you snap the people out of that slumber of thinking that they can just go through their lives without having to worry about anything because they live in America? You know?
And it can't happen here. Well, you know, part of the...
You know,
yeah.
It already has, but hey.
It's happening. It's happening right now. You know, maybe part of the explanation...
It's happening, exactly, yeah, so...
Maybe part of the explanation is something else you've also touched on, which is the social dislocation and the breakdown in societal links, in kinship links, in family links.
There was a study done on that. That was Newsletter, 80-something, 2, 3, I don't know. But, a study on social isolation, and the results were just astounding on just how completely socially isolated that the American people are these days, and just the results, I don't remember the exact numbers, it's been a while now, but I mean, basically what the study found is that the vast majority of Americans have no social networks beyond their own immediate family anymore, and a significant number of people do not even have a close bond with even a family member. I mean, people, you know, a huge proportion of people said that they have absolutely no one in their life that they can really, you know, sit down and talk to and have some kind of a meaningful, you know, conversation with.
And
that's very deliberate. I mean, the authors of the study did not draw this conclusion, but what I concluded is that that's a very deliberate outcome, a very deliberate consequence of the, you know, psychological warfare that's been waged on the American people for decades now.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate divide and conquer strategy. Divide everyone into their own little sphere of existence, you know, completely isolated from, you know, and they compared the statistics to those from just, I don't know, like two or three decades ago, which were the only other ones available, and there was just a radical decline in people who, you know, have close bonds with neighbors or coworkers or, you know, co-members of various organizations and whatnot. And, you know, there's just none of that anymore. It's, you know, you have your wife or your husband, and, you know, if you're lucky, you have that one person that you can kind of share your life with. And, yeah, the statistics are just staggering on how completely isolated and alone we are over here.
Yeah, actually, it was newsletter 85. And
85.
You can go to davesweb.cnchost to pull up newsletter 85. I've got the stats here. They are awesome. You wrote, in 1985, about 30% of people had a close relationship with at least one co-worker. By 2004, that had dropped to 18%. The percentage of respondents enjoying a close relationship with a co-member of a group dropped from 26% down to 11.8%. And the most astounding statistic was that 53% or so of people had no close non-kin relationships. It's a very, very sick society, Europe.
Oh, it's very, yeah, I mean, that's just staggering to think that over half the people have no one outside their own immediate family that they feel a strong kinship or bond, you know, I mean, you know, there's no sense of neighborhood here, there's no sense of community, there's nothing, you know.
So it's a virtual world then, which is perfect for television reality. You know, so maybe that's a big factor in why there hasn't been the kind of reaction to the stuff that's gone on. I think it is. I think you're right.
It's getting worse, I believe. I mean, my kids' generation there, so, I mean, you know, they don't do the things that I did when I was a kid. They're not out in the streets actually, you know, running amok with their friends. They're home sitting on their computers talking via cell phone or by instant messenger or, you know, by text messaging and, you know, all these sort of electronic conveniences that, you know, technology is a huge part of it. You know, we've all, you know, the internet is a great tool and everything, you know, and all that, but you know, it's been a continual process, you know, television and computers and the internet, you know, and all this technology that you know makes our life easier also draws us more and more into this sort of pattern of social isolation.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, it's the statistics are quite grim, really, of how bad we've become. And if you look out there, you can see that the trend is continuing. You know, I'd hate to see what the statistics look like in another, you know, 10 or 20 years.
And it's been no accident, really, because, you know, you've outlined some of the methodologies that have been used. And one of them has certainly been the fact that people are afraid to let their kids out in the street alone anymore. And you were and have made a special study of the issue of the serial killer meme that has been smeared all over society, particularly over the last 10 years or so, and the effect
that has. That's played a huge part. That the whole kind of serial killer mythology, along with the school and workplace shooters. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a dangerous world out there, right? I mean, you know, it's you gotta protect your kids from everything now. They're not even safe in school. You know, they're not even. You know, you're not safe in your own workplace. You know, anybody could be a serial killer. Anybody could be a terrorist, you know. it's just a continual process of instilling fear in people and driving them apart.
Yeah, yeah. So no accident, but quite a deliberate strategy.
You can't send your kids out on Halloween because they're going to get an apple with a razor blade in it, you know, or, It's all of the stuff that I did when I was a kid is now considered, you know, I mean, you're like a negligent parent now if you let your kids do the kind of stuff that I did when I was a kid. It's because it's all just driven by fear. Most of it just completely irrational.
Yeah. You wrote actually that if you allowed your kids to do the kind of stuff that you did when you were a kid, that the child services would take your kids away today.
Yeah, pretty much. Because you can't even let your kid walk to school and then back anymore. You take them there, you bring them home, you deposit them in their room, and if they want to talk with their friends, they go online or they pick up their cell phone. It's just less and less meaningful human interaction as technology more and more invades our lives, and as these, this whole program of selling fear to the American people just, ratchets up and up and up and up.
Yeah, however, one good thing is that, and I certainly find that in relation to our own forum on breakfornews.com, is that when you get a few hundred people who have some intelligence and an ability to see what's going on, that it's reinvented the art of written communication as a very powerful tool for being able to analyze what's going on and to create comradeship and to create a collective view of what's going on and to preserve sanity. So that is at least one upside, where you get a more in-depth kind of contact with others who share a similar outlook.
Well, all this technology is kind of a double-edged sword, I couldn't live without my cell phone, I've become so attached to it that it's with me constantly, which means that, I have a nice little tracking device with me anywhere I go, there's definitely an upside and definitely a downside to all of the technology that we take for granted nowadays.
Yeah. Let's turn to just one of the areas that you have given some investigation to. And it's an area of 9/11 research that is mysteriously absent from most of the lunatic speculation, and that's the issue of Flight 93. You've got a great series there on the site, which is your Series 4, or Act 4, of September 11 Revisited. Flight 93, hey, yeah, it seemed to try to drop off the radar, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, as far as the... From almost every perspective, the media never really paid that much attention to it. On the day of the attacks and for days and weeks after that, there was wall-to-wall television coverage, but all we saw was the planes hitting the towers falling down, people wandering around covered with dust, looking dazed and confused. You never saw anything about Flight 93. It was kind of mentioned as a footnote at best.
Mm-hmm.
And even among the alternative community, there's been very little written about Flight 93. There's been some people that have insisted that it was shot down, but they haven't really presented, anything like a comprehensive case to back that up. And the stuff that has been written about it has been some of it's been really kind of offensive. Questioning of the phone calls and labeling of the surviving relatives as liars or in on the thing, all this type of stuff. And
it doesn't hold up.
The theory about the Cleveland airport, which if you take a really close look at that, it does not add up at all. But apart from those, few little odds and ends here and there, you'll find very little on most 911 skeptic websites concerning Flight 93. The only real exception has been Hollywood, which has done more with Flight 93 than with any of the other aspects of the of that day. They made like 3 or 4 feature length films. Flight 93, United 93, The Flight That Fought Back, and
blah blah blah. It looks like 93. If anything was real, 93 was a real one. 93 had real guys, if you call it real, that people wear red bandanas and have fake bombs strapped to their waists, if you call that real. These were like cartoon hijackers, but that it was the real one. And of course, that's why they're so interested in writing the story of that one.
Yeah, I think some of the real core truth about what really happened that day may be hidden in the forgotten details of the Flight 93 story. I didn't think so when I first. It actually, that was just going to be like a one-part sort of addendum that I was going to put on there. And as I looked more and more at it, I realized that there was a lot of stuff there that hadn't really ever been brought to light, so to speak.
Yeah.
And one of these days, I'm actually going to finish it. There is a part six too. When I'm going to look at a few of the unanswered questions, and I think we might be able to come up with some fairly plausible answers as to how this was, the operational details of how this was actually pulled off.
Yeah. Well, you've got five very good parts. Quality, not quantity. Take your time with part six, dude. We're in no hurry. And in fact, let's just take a break for some more music. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com. I'm with Dave McGowan, and we'll be right back.
Don't you know that I'll be around to guide you through your weakest moments, to leave them behind you, returning nightmares. Only shadows will cast some light, and you'll be alright. Cast some light. Crosses all over, heavy on your shoulders. The sirens inside you, waiting to step forward. Disturbing silence, darkens your sight. We'll cast some light and you'll be alright. We'll cast some light.
You're very welcome back. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com. I'm with Dave McGowan. The website is davesweb.cnchost, and there are 91 almost newsletters and a host of other good stuff there as well. Check it out. During the break there, we were just talking about, well, I'm going to out you now, Dave. We were talking about cigarette smoking. You evil, evil, evil person, Dave. Like me, you actually consume some cigarettes. But we keep it wholesome, though, because you're supporting family farms, and you're not supporting Philip Morris, which I think is a great thing.
Yeah, I am now a Kentucky's Best smoker, which are, I am told, are, according to the packaging, they are, the tobacco is grown, processed, packaged, distributed, all basically an in-house operation run by a consortium of family farmers in Cynthiana, Kentucky. So I would recommend them to anybody that's now a Marlboro smoker to try switching, because I tried various other brands and nothing really tasted right after smoking Marlboros for like 25 years, but these are actually pretty close.
Okay.
And I can feel much better about my smoking habit now, knowing that I'm supporting family farmers rather than Philip Morris.
Yeah. Hey, what a politically incorrect discussion to be having. This is terrific. I've got a pack here which was sent by a very good Break for News supporter, without whom we literally wouldn't be here today, American Spirit. And it says on the side, made with 100% additive-free, whole-leaf, organic tobacco, no reconstituted sheet tobacco. Hey, I didn't even know there was such a thing as reconstituted sheet tobacco, and I hate to think what it might be. No processed stems, up to 25% more actual tobacco, and no additives. It's almost healthy.
Yeah, these are as well are supposed to have contain no additives. So they're so you're supporting the right people and you're smoking a somewhat healthier cigarette.
Yeah,
and you can get them on the internet for as further incentive. You can get them on the internet for about half the price of what you pay for name brand cigarettes here in California. Anyway, I don't know what they go for elsewhere in the country or the world, but. They've gotten pretty expensive here in Southern California.
Yeah, exactly.
So, if the other reasons don't inspire you, you can save money as well while smoking a healthier cigarette and not supporting a evil corporation.
Yeah.
That's my little sales pitch for the day.
Hey, that'll do it for me. I just love politically incorrect discussions. Let's continue some of it, because so much has gone on since we last spoke, Dave, and you've written also about the Katrina episode and cut through some of the more obvious lunatic bullshit about that as well. And not caused by scalar weapons, you don't think, but definitely exploited. Not caused by scalar weapons, but definitely it was exploited. I mean, the hurricane missed, but they still made it look like it hit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was another one of the things that I thought, you know, was might finally tip the scales in our favor, because I mean that was just so blatant, and you know, I mean, you had even some of the seasoned television reporters that, you know, stand up there every night and tell lies with a straight face were having a hard time selling what was going on in you know, down there in the days right after that hurricane supposedly hit. You know, I mean, it was just insane that I mean, this stuff was being carried live on television, you know, and yet people have already seemed to have forgotten about it. You know, I mean, it's just one more little Bush scandal that, you know, came and went, and life goes on. Well, for most of us, life goes on. Over, you know, I don't know how many people. We'll never really know how many people we lost there.
Yeah.
I don't think nobody's even asking anymore, you know, if there was ever an official body count.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird when you think back. And so many things dropped off the radar as well, too, such as the shootout on the bridge, which, you know, got a few lines of newsprint and then sort of disappeared.
Some of the little details. It just seems so long ago, doesn't it? I mean, it's just, you know, thinking back, I guess because we've been assaulted with so many other,
yeah,
you know, Cywar type things since then, it just seems like an eternity. Although, well, it was only, what, was it 2 years or 3 years? It hasn't been very long.
Not even that, dude.
Really?
Yeah, man, they're just hitting us continually. Actually, the last 6 months or so has been, you know, about the only time that we haven't been under constant psychological warfare assault, which I think they got to do from time to time in order to just sort of give a break before they come back, probably with bird flu and God knows what else. But
yeah, it has been relatively quiet, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, other than, of course, the... the uproar over Anna Nicole Smith. You know, I mean, that's important news there.
And I think they exploit that as well, too, because people sort of go a bit asleep, and I think they wanted them to go asleep after the staged victory by the Democrats. So they wanted people to sort of relax their guard. They wanted them to get apolitical. They wanted them to back off the Bush administration and the Iraq war, etc. And it's pretty much worked. They've ramped up the numbers in Iraq, and yet, hey, nothing's happening about it, dude. The Democrats won, and we put more troops in. How good is that?
They got the Democratic majority in Congress, and a lot of people say, "Well, okay, you know, they're gonna turn this thing around now." But if you look at what they've actually done, they're pumping more bodies in there, they're pumping more money in there. They've approved, you know, massive amounts of funding to keep it going. Not only to keep it going, but to ramp it up. You mm-hmm. know, and yet the American people very clearly, collectively spoke last November, and what they said was, we want this war over and we want our boys back home. And yet there's no indication whatsoever that anyone on the supposed Democratic side of the aisle is going to actually do anything to, you know, to start winding things down there. It's going to go on and on. It's going to get worse. It's going to get bloodier. It's going to get more expensive in terms of bodies, in terms of money. And, you know, there's no heroes in Washington that are going to save us from this.
Yeah. It's like as if, of course, you know, the American people spoke. They answered the question, well, do you want the ardent fist or the velvet glove? And the American people said, we want the velvet glove. So they said, okay, we'll hit you with that one then.
Yeah.
And so there's no way out. I think that's part of the psychological war as well, that at a subliminal level, they want people to know there's no way out. And I think there is no way out unless we totally reinvent the political system, unless we totally reinvent social structure, unless we totally reinvent work, home, family, society. It's quite a challenge, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right that, you know, I mean, on the surface, they want it to look like, you know, there's somebody speaking for you in Washington, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you're a liberal-minded kind of guy, that the Democratic Party is looking out for you in Washington on the surface. But I think you're right that subliminally they want us to know, they want us to realize, they want to hit us over the head with the fact that we really are powerless and no one is looking out for us. And guess what? There's not a damn thing you can do about it. You know, that's the message that's being subliminally sent out.
I think that's why they had Bill Clinton and George Bush Sr. hanging out together and, you know, going golfing together, etc. It was to once again send that message. They're playing it right very close to the edge there, because the truth of it is that George Bush Sr. has been running things ever since the Reagan era.
Yeah, I mean,
he's the man.
It was extraordinary, really, that they, you know, they were just, you know, walking around, you know, traveling around the world hand in hand, pretty much. You know, these supposed mortal enemies, you know, on completely opposite sides of every issue of any importance, supposedly, and here they are joining forces. And I mean, Clinton just blatantly stepped in a number of times to do damage control for little George, you know, after Katrina and, you know, after quite a few things, he stepped in to try to, you know, because people listen to him. I mean, if this guy that's diametrically opposed to, you know, Bush is saying, no, this is okay, then, you know, the people are supposed to believe that it must be because, you know, Bill Clinton's saying it, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it was kind of extraordinary how blatant it was that mm-hmm. these two were just sort of traipsing around, you know, visiting, you know, areas of devastation and whatnot, and just like they were just, you know, best buddies from way back, which of course they are, but we're not really supposed to know that. But, you know, like you say, maybe we are kind of supposed to know that in the back of our minds.
Yeah, these people are absolute masters of psychological warfare and psychological manipulation. You got to hand it to them, Dave.
Well, you know, like I said, they've had a lot of times, and they've co-opted the very best minds in the country from, you know, the scientific disciplines, the mm-hmm. behavioral sciences, physical, you know, from a wide array of disciplines, you know, the CIA has over the decades, you know, co-opted the best minds in the country, and they have virtually unlimited budget and a lot of time, a lot of brain power, and a lot of money. And, they're a formidable opponent, there's no doubt. I mean, they know what they're doing. They've had a lot of time to hone these techniques, and they know what works. They absolutely know what works, and, they know how to spin just about anything.
Yeah, well, you know.
Anything that seems initially to be a devastating blow can be spun to where it's becomes a positive, you know. It's incredible to watch, really. If it didn't directly affect me, you know, I could just sit back and sort of marvel at how well they actually do play the game. But unfortunately, it's.
Well, I tell you, the only upside there is that, you know, we are seeing the game, and we've remarked in discussion on the forum how 9/11 really was an op too far. From the point of view of having switched us on to the game, we are onto them. Okay, there's not many of us who are onto them at the level we're onto them right now in this discussion we're having, but we are onto them. And when I look back at myself, say, you know, 10 years ago, oh, what a dummy. What a dummy. Jeez.
I look back to when I got my first book published, and I thought I was so savvy, politically savvy, 10 years ago, and now I look back and realize that I still had a long way to go on the learning curve, and I hope that I don't look back 10 years in the future and realize that I still don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Well, I tell you what, you know, it's a mixed blessing.
I read somewhere once, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I think it's a good little quote. Unfortunately, I don't remember the exact quote, but basically it was that the truth is an onion, and what you encounter on the outside is just the first sort of layer of lies, and as you peel your way through, every time you come to a new layer, it appears that you've arrived at the real truth until you encounter some new information that makes you realize that you're still not there. So you peel away another layer, and every time you peel away a layer, you think that you finally arrived at the truth, but all that you're really getting is just new levels of disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick is to know how, when you've actually reached the real truth through all of those layers of lies, because there's no like signpost that's going to be sitting there saying, you know, congratulations, you successfully navigated your way through all the lies and now you know the truth. So, you know, the best that any of us can do is just, you know, do the best we can with putting the pieces of the puzzle together in a way that that seems to fit all the known facts and that seems to make sense. But we don't really know, none of us really know when and if we have arrived at the truth. So, you know, you do the best that you can with what you have to work with.
Yeah, that's true. Although I think as well there is a process of personal psychological transformation which goes along with this, a lot of angst, a lot of re-examination of yourself that goes along with this. And, you know, if you think, just imagine if you were one of those people who, you know, thinks that Al Gore is really trying to save the planet. You know, imagine if you were back there, Dave. It's a fate worse than death. I can't imagine that, man.
Yeah.
And that's still going strong.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about the personal transformation. I mean, the difference between, you know, where I was at, well, not 10 years ago, but maybe 20 years ago, and where I'm at now is just, I mean, it's life-altering. I mean, it's like waking up one day and all of a sudden, you know, up is down and black is white, and, you know, you just, your whole world just turns upside down. And, you know, there's anger at realizing that you've been lied to all your life. You know, there's outrage, there's depression, there's frustration, there's confusion. You know, I mean, there's just a whole tangle of emotions that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
As someone that's, you know, been just, you know, sort of trapped
in the lies all their life suddenly starts opening their eyes and realizing just how vast the web of lies really is. It's pretty overwhelming, you know. I mean, I went through that, I don't know, probably, you know, I don't even know how at what point. But, you know, I mean, there were some rough times, you know, trying to come to terms with, you know, such a radical alteration of your core values and your basic beliefs about how the world operates.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's a stormy sea, but you do get to the center of the storm. I think that the closer you get into the onion, towards the center of the onion, the calmer it is. It's weird, and you do start to accommodate the change that you've been through, and you do start to see more clearly. And it's impossible to go back. Absolutely impossible to go back. The only way for us is to keep going.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what you mean about the things becoming more calm and whatnot. And you accommodate. You learn to accommodate to your new reality. And for a while, you might feel like, you know, how am I even going to function in this world? I mean, this is just, my whole world's been turned upside down. But you learn to accommodate and muddle along. And there's a certain amount of calming effect, to me anyway, of having the world now make sense. You know, when it used to be that when something had happened, some big event would happen, it would just be so confusing to me, because I knew, there was so much that didn't add up, but I didn't know how to put the pieces together correctly. You know, and now I think that I do, and if something happens, it makes perfect sense now. I can look at it and say, oh, well, you know, okay, I know where this is going. You know, so there's a certain amount of comfort that comes from having an understanding of how your world really works and having world events make sense. I mean, you may not like what you see, but at least it makes sense to you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, not liking what you see is sort of goes with the territory. Perhaps it is essentially a spiritual world that you begin to inhabit. And we're certainly questioning so much on the forum. We've got sections on the forum where we're questioning the nature of reality, where we came from, who we are. I suppose it's just that, you know, once you start questioning, you start to question everything. I think what you do get is a disconnect of your emotions from your intellect, so that you're not reacting and thinking emotionally. There are so many people who just think emotionally. They think they're using reason, but in fact they're using primarily emotion. And you do free yourself so that you're actually able to think more clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, that's how we're conditioned to think and react. I think we're conditioned. That's, you know, that's one of the things that you have to break out of. That's one of the things that that you definitely have to move away from is responding emotionally, because that's what we are encouraged to do. We're not encouraged to look too deeply. You know, you don't want to overthink anything.
Yeah, they keep
raising those uncomfortable questions.
They keep pushing our buttons, yeah, because they want us to respond emotionally. Okay, let's see if we can draw some inspiration for where we go from here. We'll take another very quick music break. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com. I'm with Dave McGowan, and we'll be right back.
Over the past few years, to the traditional sounds of an English summer, the drone of lawnmowers, the smack of leather on willow, has been added a new noise.
What were the skies like when you were young?
They went on forever. We lived in Arizona, and the skies always had little fluffy clouds, and they were light and clear, and there were lots of stars, and they were beautiful, the most beautiful skies, as a matter of fact. The sunsets were purple and red and yellow and on fire, and the clouds would catch the colors of them. That's it, me, because I used to look at them. You don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that.
One of the things that comes up all the time, and that's just what I wanted to touch on, was the answer to the question, well, where do we go from here? It came up in discussion on the forum and in private conversations, and one of the places it seems that we're not going from here is like some kind of mass movement, invent a new democratic party and go through the whole same political bullshit all over again, because the feeling was we're going to just end up in the same place. We'll just get hijacked, diverted, subsumed. I don't think that that's necessarily the way. I think it's got to have to be something much deeper, and we're going to have to be a bit patient because there's not enough of us just yet who are switched on.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, and I definitely agree that there's no. I don't think there's going to be like an organized political party that's going to arise to bail us out of this situation. I mean, the system is just so fundamentally corrupt and so completely co-opted that by the time any movement got to the point where it had national prominence, it's going to be completely and thoroughly co-opted and infiltrated and misdirected, and like the 9-1-1 movement is now.
Right. It brings to mind the Wizard of Oz, actually, where it was so good to be back in Kansas, eventually, after all those great adventures. And back in Kansas, to me, is back to the social network. It's back with a modern understanding, but back to the roots of community, back to real community, and an end to this, because we've technologically invented ourselves out of necessity. We're not stuck in necessity anymore. We're smart monkeys. And we could afford to go back and get off the treadmill, for crying out loud. We could afford to take time out to inherit that inheritance of our own inventiveness, which they promised us was going to lead us all to 2-day weeks or 2.5-day weeks and loads of leisure time. And we could use that leisure time to rebuild the community we've lost. To me, that seems got to be at the heart of where we go from here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something that's very, very sorely lacking over here anyway. Certainly is any kind of a sense of community or sense of neighborhood, kind of thing that we had, when I was a kid, which wasn't all that long ago, and I'm sure it was even stronger, community bonds, 20 years before that, the study that we were talking about, they compared the statistics with those that were available from like 20 years previous, and unfortunately there's no earlier statistics available, but I have no doubt that we've been moving down this road for a very long time, and we definitely need to turn it around and start heading back in the other direction and reestablishing neighborhoods and communities and social networks there just really isn't any of that. Not where I live anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
None of my neighbors even know. I mean, I live, within a couple of doors of people that have lived there. I've lived next to them for years, and we don't even know each other's names. It's incredible. When I was a kid, everybody in the neighborhood knew everybody, and everybody looked out for, all the moms were like neighborhood mothers, there just isn't any of that kind of vibe anymore.
here at all. There's no sense of belonging to any kind of a neighborhood or community or anything like that. And we really need to get that back, because we just needs to build on like a grassroots level. And that's undoubtedly exactly why we have been driven to the point that we are now at, to prevent people from bonding together in
right.
common interest. You know, it's very deliberate that we've been isolated the way that we are, and we've got to wake up to that fact and start turning it around.
Yeah, yeah. The difficulty for us from a practical point of view is the economic structure is designed to make sure we don't even have the time to have community. And yet at the same time, there is this wall of psychological warfare and disinformation. To cut through all that, it seems that the only common denominator you could find that you could get common agreement with others on is the need to reestablish community and the realization that we are being fucked. Primal.
Absolutely.
Let's not argue on the details.
But the capital F.
Capital F.
Yeah.
We are all being fucked. And if anything can unite people, it's that realization of that and a reestablishment of a social structure based on that realization. A new commonality. The fucked.
that is absolutely a key step to turning things around is to reestablish community bonds that are so sadly lacking now. And yeah, we all live in these little pressure cooker lives where every minute of your day is accounted for. And like you said before, we were supposed to get to the point where we weren't going to have to work so hard. But all this, you look at any of the statistics, and what they show is that people are working harder and harder for less and less money.
Yeah,
it's exactly the opposite of what was supposed to, of the bill of goods that we were sold many, many years ago.
Yeah, maybe there's almost the genesis of that is really close, and that it's possible for us to put aside the divisions. I'm so politically different from the people down the road is just not true. But maybe I can go to the people down the road and they can come to me and we can both look each other in the eye and say, you know what? We are fucked. We've got to do something about it. And we've got to walk away from the current system.
Yeah, we absolutely have to. We absolutely have to. And we have to quit pinning our hopes every 2 years that a national election is going to change a damn thing, because it's not. The midterm election did not change a damn thing. It's not going to change a thing. We're not going to change its direction. This Congress has no intention of reversing, the Patriot Act or pulling out of the war or, really seriously investigating any of the numerous scandals of the Bush administration. No intention of doing that. There's zero chance that that's going to happen. And, for people that are still sitting around thinking that the next presidential election is going to be the one that changes it, well, that's not going to work either. We both know that it's, as we were talking about earlier, that it's likely to be Hillary, and just a continuation of the same regime that's been running the show since at least 1980,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's no super political way out, and it seems that just coming together and realizing this basic fuckedness is like putting us back in the same shoes that our forebears were in back in the turn of the 18th into the 19th century, when they realized they had to come together as labor, realizing that they were being exploited. And it gave birth to the union movement back at that time, and it was a huge struggle for the ordinary people to recover their rightful inheritance from those who were exploiting them. We're right back there, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the unions have been completely destroyed, and the ones that remain have been so totally co-opted that they're basically a tool of management now instead of a tool of labor. And that's another bond that's been shattered, because the old unions, that was yet another strong source of social bonds, and people coming together with common interests and whatnot. And you know, it's all interconnected, and it's all rigged against us.
Yeah, yeah. And
it happens for a reason, and it's not to benefit you and I.
Yeah, yeah. And I've had a growing feeling that, you know, the role for people like ourselves who write on these subjects and do analysis of it is to continue to do that, so that there is, if you like, we are the intelligence service of reality for people who want to find out what is actually going on. That's probably the most valuable thing that we can do. Not necessarily marching up and down in the street with a placard, but continuing to do and to provide forums for the analysis, which helps people to understand the big game and what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, maybe decades from now, people will look back and dig up our old work and, you know, yeah, it's Benton and Dave. Those guys were fucking geniuses. Why didn't we listen to them 30 years ago?
Hey, let's hope it's not going to take
30... Maybe not, but, you know...
Let's hope it's not going to take 30 years, because God knows the state we'd be in by then. But, yeah, I agree. There's going to be a bit of looking back in due course, yeah. I hope I'm still young and healthy enough to appreciate it all when it happens. I hope it happens soon, Dave.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Yeah.
I hope so, too.
In the meantime, I would... certainly encourage you to keep it up, Dave. 91, hey, you got to go to at least 180 before you slow down. Hey, you're doing great work. Check it out, folks.
I have a new series in the works that I've actually been working on. That's one of the reasons that I haven't posted in so long, because I kind of got sidetracked onto this sort of a new area of research that just... As these things go, you know, you start digging into these things, and next thing you know, it's branching off into a million directions, and everything's connected to everything, and, you know, you start out thinking that you're looking at a sort of a specific area, and before you know it, it just becomes this all-encompassing scenario, you know? So I got a new project of sorts that I will be debuting pretty soon that hopefully... my fans out there will appreciate.
Looking forward to it. And I hope people will post it. You never know, you might even post it in the forum yourself, because we've a lot of switched on people there. And it's great to talk to you, Dave. It's great to talk. You know, the last time I did something was on the Jim Fetzer show on GCN. There were ad breaks every, like, 7 minutes, and the ad breaks lasted for about five. And it was such a dumbed-down conversation. It's been great to chat with you, Dave, and to chat with somebody who hasn't caught the West Nile virus 9/11 thing and who hasn't turned into a lunatic over the last 2 years. And you sound as sane as you did back on the 9th of September 2004 when we last spoke. And let's not leave it as long. By the way, folks, check that out in the audio archive on breakfornews.com, and you can have a listen to that vintage interview from 2004. Let's not leave it as long. And thanks for joining us today, Dave.
Good talking to you.
You have been listening to Mr. David McGowan. The website, once again, davesweb.cnchost.com. And you can check out Dave's published books there. You might even buy one. Who knows? They are Programmed to Kill, Understanding the F-Word, and Derailing Democracy. That was great. Can't believe it's more than 2 years since we spoke to Dave. It feels like about five. But of course, there's been a lot of water under the bridge in those 2 years. Or should I say, a lot of water across the levee in those 2 years. And I hope he'll join us again very soon on the show also. You know, one thing that came across to me there during the course of that is that we have been doing so much firefighting over the last few years. We're like firemen with the city burning down, rushing hither and thither, just trying to put the flames out. But now perhaps we're getting a chance for reflection, and we'll continue to do that. We'll continue to examine the past, to discuss the present, and to chart the future. And I will be back very shortly with some more. I do hope that you can take the time to join me for that. But in the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
You always keep me warm, hold me safe and away from home. Keep day for night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Will you
you always keep me warm, hold me safe and away from harm. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun.
Walking into the sun.